plate a potential nugget.
So let's dive into Sponge, Ambi. I read it with a lot of interest.
You need to dive into the ocean to look at the get the sponge, right?
Exactly. So dive. I did. And it's sort of drenching wet. So it's time to squeeze it out now. So, first of all, what I really liked was sort of the candor and the fact that they were not anonymous case studies. I guess these are clients where they have trust. And the fact that you take names actually makes it easier to digest and possibly, lends that credibility. But maybe to talk about a few themes that really caught my attention and piqued my curiosity. One of the pieces, you talk about flying without a net. And you refer to leaders willing to take risks and exposing themselves to a different point of view. I've also spoken to a few investors, VC investors, a part of the podcast. And, this sort of balance between having conviction in your beliefs and being open to other ideas is a fine tightrope. And, sometimes people you find swaying too far on either end. So give us a sense of what's your insight here. What have you seen good leaders do in sort of keeping the conviction, but also leaving the door open for new opinions to shape their beliefs?
So this is Flying Without a Net, I think, is a name of a book written by Thomas DeLong. And I've quoted that in one of the chapters. So I think all leaders at some time or the other are really flying without a net. So you may fall thud and then you may actually break every bone in your body, or you may actually end up, apply. So I think the big thing a leader has to do is to surround himself with a team who can help him take that call, right? You never have all the answers. So then, for example, in that story, when we went and recommended to GSK that they should position CobaDex, CZS, which is a multivitamin with chromium, zinc and selenium, purely for diabetic patients, no one had done that before. There were hundreds of antioxidants. This CZS is antioxidants. Hundreds of antioxidants. And all the antioxidants are making all the claims. So it's good for diabetes, good for heart patients, it's good for skin, it's good for falling hair, it is good for peeling, everything. So we said, no, you should take it one single dimension. So and at that stage, and I think it was bold of the marketing team, they said, look, we are scared. I don't know whether we can do this. But it was bold of them not to reject it. They said, look, let's take this to the MD. You present your story to the MD. And if the MD agrees, we'll go with it. A lot of time what happens is the people in the middle layer put in so many filters that they are so scared of taking any decision. And they're always second guessing the boss. And by the time the boss gets to see it, what is shown is completely, mishmash of what was the original thought. So here, I think two things happened. One, the team felt that, yes, it was a risky strategy, but they were willing to take it to their boss and stand by it, saying, yeah, agencies recommended it. We think it's risky, but it's worth a shot. And the CEO at that time said, yeah, I agree. Let's go with it, right? So obviously there was gut and brain. So there was analysis which showed that it was a big market. But of course, it was a gut feel reaction. So in marketing, we see that all the time. Most brand managers, brand teams want to hedge their bets. I want to appeal to young women. I want to appeal to middle-aged women. I want to appeal to young adults. I want to appeal to slightly middle-aged adults. Life can't go that way, right? So you have to take a chance and punt and hope and pray it works. If it doesn't work, good. You'll learn something.
But staying with that, is there something to be said about the leadership style of the CEO at that time for the team to feel comfortable letting you present the risky idea up there?
I think a lot can be said about the CEO and the team, right? one, the team was confident enough to take something like this to the CEO. Because they knew the CEO will not throw them out of the room. Okay. And the CEO was smart enough to say, hey, this looks interesting. And he encouraged the team to take such ideas to him. So I think it's both ways, right? I mean, both the CEO encourages the team to come up. So which is what we say, right? If you're the CEO, don't surround yourself with only people who are second guessing you. Ensure that you have people who disagree with you, who bring you ideas which you don't like.
This insight reminds me of the findings at Google, where they looked at high-performing teams. Pardon the pun, but if you want to Google it, the initiative was called Project Aristotle. The crux of the insight was that when they looked at what separated the great teams from the average teams, it was the climate that prevailed in these teams. The great teams were those where people felt psychologically safe to take risks, make mistakes, and share their opinions freely. In McKinsey, we would call it obligation to dissent, where in a problem-solving conversation, there's no real hierarchy in the room. A director and a business analyst from college are on the same plane. While Ambi talks about it in the context of making better business decisions, I've also noticed that psychological safety is also a prerequisite for the leader to get candid feedback. At the highest levels, a lot of the personal growth for the CEO depends on the quality of the self-awareness, and a big portion of that is whether you're getting the right data flowing in to drive that picture. I've seen too many leaders live in a bubble of hubris, arrogance and aggression, and it's often a matter of time before it comes back to haunt you. Thank you for listening. For more podcast content curated by Theme, please visit playtopotential.com. And to know more about the coaching and transition advisory work I do, please visit transitioninsight.com.